Chapter 4. Aspen. Aspen tried to ignore the glares Rouge and Silas sent his way, but it was difficult, especially when his neck felt so cold without the warm little bat snuggled up to him. Instead, Silas was on Rouge's shoulder, watching him with large golden eyes that held an accusatory gleam. He cleared his throat slightly, looking towards Sumi instead of the two young females. "So, Sumi and I learned that the group that attacked us today were given a quest by someone in Bright. Unfortunately, the quest was issued to the leader of the guild, who shared it with the rest of his guild members, so Flying Fire didn't know who it came from. She did, however, know that her group was not the only one to receive it, so we can expect more attacks like this one." He held up an amulet. It was a simple stone needle on a leather thong, but the tip of the needle swerved to point at him no matter how he moved it. Apparently, they found something of mine, and a mage was able to create a tracking spell with it. Flying Fire didn't know if the other groups also had one of these, but it's best to assume that they do. "I know someone who can do a cleansing ritual to cleave the link between me and the trackers, but last I heard, she'd moved to Bloodhaven." He looked back at Rouge, who was slumped in her chair, arms folded, glaring. He sighed. "Rouge, you said you came out here to meet Duke Penbrook, correct?" She sat up straight, expression brightening. "Yeah. So, are you ready to admit you're him?" He paused, topaz eyes widening. "Ah." She waved her hand, rolling her eyes. "Come on, Aspen. There's no one else out here. You're some big war hero, and you have all these super loyal, super awesome companions. I'd have to be an idiot to think you're a regular old retired soldier turned farmer. I may be just a kid, but I'm not an idiot." Righteous indignation bled from every word. Aspen sighed, running his hand through his already disheveled hair. "I know, Rouge. I don't think you're just a kid, either. I do think," he looked at her piercingly, "that you're an innocent and an idealist. There were choices to be made today that you and Silas didn't need to bear the weight of. Not yet, anyway. I'm sorry if you feel slighted, but your task was also important, and I don't regret sparing you those choices." Rouge deflated, slumping in her seat again, though this time she just looked rebellious and a little thoughtful. "Fine," she muttered, "whatever. So you admit that you're this Duke guy?" Sarave was staring at Aspen, her gaze questioning, and now it was her eyes he avoided. "Yes, all right. After the Battle of Bright, when Akuji was slain, Jarl and King Chester needed someone to pin a hero label on. It couldn't be either of them, because the nobility knew they were in the city at the time. They needed someone weak but believable, with no political clout. I, drained and disliked as I was the perfect human sacrifice. While I laid in bed, too weak to move a finger, Chester made me a duke. Gerald claimed credit for the plan, though any imperfections were my own fault." He shook his head. "They were all waiting for me to die. Another martyr to join Lark, this one political instead of religious. When I failed to do so, thanks to my friends here," he nodded his head towards Sumi, Silas and Kor, who had his nose stuck in through the window, as usual, "they tried to help me along to my final rest." His voice was bitter at these last words, as he remembered the poor weak king, with whom he had shared more than one heartfelt talk over tea and battle maps. 3 poisoning attempts, a hidden dart trap in his clothes chest, and 2 arrows accidentally sent his way when he was on the balcony getting some fresh air. All in rapid succession. Sumi inserted. "After that, we started planning to get him out of the city." "Chester made him the Duke of the North," Kor put in, snickering slightly, but he didn't say what that meant. "So we figured, might as well claim the whole northern area of Quarternell, right?" "I got to take a message to the king," Silas piped up. "He lives in a really, really big castle. It has 3 kitchens and 7 gardens. It was really hard to find him, but Sumi told me to look for the teeny tiny miniature buildings, and there he was." Aspen glanced at Sarave. The goblin looked confused, since she couldn't hear the animal speak. Aspen picked the narrative up again. "Sumi wrote a letter. She said I was dying, and wanted to go somewhere alone to do it. It took some back and forth, but she convinced Chester to make a deed for the homestead north of the Whispering Mountains and all unclaimed lands surrounding it." Sumi's voice was smug. "He's rather absent-minded, King Chester, especially if you catch him away from all his advisors and ministers. He also forgot to limit Aspen's rights to anything valuable found on or under the land, likely because Aspen was supposed to die. So here we are. Aspen shrugged. I always intended to go back for more supplies, if I survive the winter, though not until after summer harvest. It seems that whoever sent these assassins after me isn't content to wait, however. I checked the pass. Cor put in. The snow is still deep. I went halfway up the first peak, and I could barely see above the snow. I don't know how that lot got here. Aspen looked towards Sumi. According to Flying Fire, they had 5 float scrolls. They used the scrolls on a hide, and then rode the hide across the mountains. Each scroll lasted 1 day. She claimed they were a quest reward PO0. He grimaced as the spider raised a warning foreleg. Ah, their leader had in his inventory for some time, waiting for something fun to use it on. Apparently, he decided this was it. Rouge nodded. That makes sense. Those guys weren't all that high-leveled, so they were probably casual gamers who thought the quest sounded interesting. They were probably in it more for the entertainment value than any interest in whatever the quest reward was. She looked at Aspen. Did she say what it was? His face was grim. 500 gold, 300 experience, and a weapon of rare or higher rating. The elven thief's hazel eyes widened. Wow. They came all the way out here for that. They must have been bored. Hey, hang on a sec. Her eyes went wide and blank. Aspen looked at the others in confusion. 500 gold was enough for a family to live on for a year. Add in the experience and the weapon, and half the Thieves Guild in Bright should have been knocking down their door. Why did the traveler girl seem so dismissive? Rouge's eyes came back into focus. Yep, that's what I thought. Those scrolls only drop in the cloud dungeon and sell for about 1,000 gold each. That's good money, so the 500 doesn't even come close to making it up. The XP is chump change, and rare weapons aren't that hard to come by, especially if they didn't specify what kind of weapon. I mean, a rare simple iron dagger sells at auction for about 75 gold. Whoever set that quest either wasn't very serious about it, or they didn't know much about travelers. Or, she paused thoughtfully, there's something Flying Fire either didn't tell you or didn't know. Just then she jumped and clapped her hands over her ears, blanching. Oh holy hand grenades. That was my logout alarm. Sorry guys. I forgot I'm at work. I'll log back on when I get home. Her eyes went blank and her face expressionless once again. The group looked at each other, bemused, and Aspen went to get the blanket to cover her up. The next 2 weeks were taken up with hurried preparations for an early return to Bright. It was agreed that Sarave, Juniper, and Cor would stay at the farm with William, Nuisance, Katie, and Kaylee. Cor was powerful enough to keep them all safe from any realistic danger, and between Sumi, Sarave, and William, they could take care of the fields, which they would plant right before the others left. In the worst case, they would all escape through William's tunnels and run to the mine to hide until Aspen and the others returned. At first, Aspen thought the traveler's magical party chat would allow him to continue to communicate with those he left behind. Unfortunately, Mott and Rouge quickly disabused him of that notion. Party chat would work only as long as the speakers were within a mile or so of each other. Helped keep it realistic, apparently, though since it was already real, he wasn't sure what that meant. That meant he would have to hope that his leaving would keep the others safe. When Silas finally reported that the snow was melting, Cor went to investigate. She's right, the goat told Aspen, Mott, and Rouge, who were gathered in the kitchen for lunch. The snow is barely up to my knees now. I'm sure it's still deeper higher up, but someone could conceivably make it through the pass. Aspen looked at the two travelers. Mott was deep in thought, but Rouge was cheerfully eating the sweet carrot soup Sarave had prepared. Little Juniper, who was now beginning to speak in short sentences, was showing the elf girl the soup in her spoon as if it was the most fascinating thing in the world. Will you be ready to leave in a week? Aspen asked them. You said it could be difficult for you to travel as a zombie. Can you make it work? Mott nodded, smiling at the two girls as they giggled. We'll have to take it in shifts. Rouge will be fairly safe while she's on Codswallop, but I'll be on foot since I left my mount in Bright. I'll call him, now that the snow is melting, and he'll meet us somewhere along the way. You're sure you want to leave the wagon here? It was Aspen's turn to nod. No reason to slow ourselves down with it. I know you said your zombie could pull it, but there's no need to risk you being stuck if an attack comes. You and Rouge can carry the goods we have for sale in your inventory, and that will leave us ready to fight or run if necessary. The tank frowned a little. I appreciate your trust in us, but are you sure you want to do that? You've only known us a short time. We could betray you as soon as we enter Bright. Aspen laughed a little and pointed to the tiny bat snuggled up on Mott's shoulder. Silas knows a good heart when she meets one, and Sumi can see through liars better than anyone else I've ever met. My own judgment has sometimes been less than spectacular, but I've never known those two to be wrong. Mott's lips twitched. What about Kor? The farmer chuckled. Kor thinks everyone is out to get him. Fair enough, since usually he manages to antagonize people nearly as soon as he meets them. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. I remember one time we were getting armor made for him. The smith had seen him from a distance and was looking forward to the challenge of fitting such a magnificent beast. He shook his head. By the time he'd taken all the measurements, Kor had managed to step on his foot twice, eat some of his hair, and break the handle of his favorite hammer. That armor looked beautiful, but the inside had several places where it didn't quite fit right. Just enough off to be annoying, but not enough to do him an injury. It was the equivalent of a little boy putting itching powder in the clothes of a lad he doesn't like. He smiled ruefully. That goat is his own worst enemy. Rouge was listening by this time, though Juniper had managed to crawl into the older girl's lap and convince her to bounce her knee, as if the toddler was riding a goat. While Juniper squealed happily, Rouge grinned and spoke. Poor Kor. I'll make sure to bring him back some cinnamon rolls, too. She rolled her eyes in anticipation. This is probably the first time anyone has ever actually looked forward to returning to North Goose. Oh man, I have dreams of those buns. Though sometimes I'm afraid I'm going to wake up and find out I ate my pillow. Aspen laughed. We have quite an itinerary. Cross the Whispering Mountains before the snow has completely melted. Travel to Bloodhaven to get the link between me and any more of those amulets cut. Pass through North Goose for pastries. Then to Bright to unmask the villain who sent killers after me, and convince them to call it off. Rouge grinned. Sounds like an adventure. Even Mr. Thrillseeker over here, she hitched a thumb at Mott, can't say this is boring. Aspen quirked a smile. Did I mention that we need to plow, plant, and fertilize our fields before we go? What? Rouge nearly whimpered. Why? Aspen nodded at the little girl now busily stretching out Rouge's curls and laughing when they sprang back up when they were released. We have mouths to feed, remember? We can probably forage for much of what we need, but this is a farm. That's what we do. Rouge sighed. Vegetables? Aspen nodded and then touched the lump of the goddess seed still tightly webbed to his chest. Vegetables. But we might have a few surprises for you yet. The first task Aspen had to undertake was making a proper plow. The one they had brought with them was a simple wedge of metal with a harness attached. It was difficult enough to pull that even Kor was tired at the end of a day, and the furrows varied widely in depth. It often became stuck on stones or roots as well, even when they thought they'd cleared an area completely of any such objects. So Aspen used the axles of the cart to give him enough metal to attempt to create a new one. He had read about it in one of the books the head librarian had originally sent with them, and the book contained detailed diagrams. His first step was to make a small working model out of wood, after spending a full day clearing the area of the proposed new field as best they could, including much smaller obstructions that Rouge and Mott's zombies had ignored. Everyone was tired and cranky by the time they settled in around the fire after dinner, and Silas, the only one who hadn't worked all day, was clearly glad to get away from the grumpy group when she left to eat and fly her rounds. Sumi too left to help Silas with scouting, while most of the others opted to sleep. That left just Aspen and Sarave, who was sitting near the fire holding Juniper in her lap, in quiet companionship. Aspen applied his knife to the small pile of wood beside him, while Sarave rocked the toddler, who was drooping inexorably. When the little girl's eyes finally closed, and her steady breaths indicated that she was asleep, Sarave cleared her throat softly. You are a duke then, friend Aspen, she asked quietly, not taking her eyes from the tousled head of brown curls resting on her shoulder. Aspen sighed, plying his knife so smooth curls of wood fluttered to the ground around his feet. He would have to sweep them up before bed, or he'd hear about it from Sumi in the morning. I am. Technically, at least. I grew up in a small village and sought youthful adventure. I found far too much, and in the process got a title added to my name. Sarah's lips quirked. What is that name, if I may ask? I never heard of an Aspen associated with the war, and while I was never a warrior, everyone knew the names of all the powerful players in that contest of death. Aspen tested a tiny wheel against the shaft of wood he held, shook his head, and whittled some more. Yorga's Penbrook, Duke of the North, Hero of the Battle of Bright, Master Necromancer, Atai's left hand. You know that name? Or parts of it? Sarave closed her eyes, a shiver running through her body. Hosinte Esesekinte. Scourge of the United Peoples. This is you. Aspen spun the little wheel on a tiny axle, grunting in satisfaction before saying simply, sounds right. The goblin woman held Juniper so tightly that the child protested in her sleep, causing her mother to loosen her grip just slightly. You could not tell me. He began carving another piece. What would you have done? Run away? You did that anyway. I'm not that person anymore. Yorga's died the day he killed Akuji, and his daughter died with him. Aspen is the name I claim now. Sarave laughed roughly. You do not just get to leave everything behind. Life is not that simple. I know. Aspen put down his knife and gathered up all the pieces of his little wooden model. That's why I came here. No one was ever supposed to know that Aspen the farmer was more than a retired old soldier. You would have been happy living in this house with Juniper if you didn't know. You are still welcome here, if you can forget you're living under the same roof as a man who killed thousands of your people. It was his turn to laugh, harsh and rasping and humorless. Juniper snuffled in her sleep, little face wrinkling and eyes blinking a few times before she settled back into sleep. Sarave stroked the down soft curls away from her daughter's face. She sighed. Goblins, trolls and orcs. Yet I would trade every one of their lives for the one I hold in my arms. One you gave to me. Does that give me the right to judge, I wonder? Her thin lips quirked, briefly showing the sharp teeth her ancestors had gifted her with. No goblin ever treated me better than you have. Most of them far worse. Trolls and orcs were our slave masters, though they would claim we were serfs of our own will. Her yellow eyes, glowing faintly in the firelight, flicked toward him. Would you do me one favor, O Hosinte Esesekinte? Aspen's topaz eyes met hers straight and clear. If I am able. If you meet a goblin named Nekthat, spare him, unless he gives you no choice. He is my brother, and he tried to protect me when no one else would. He was punished for that, and all I know is that he was in Bright when I was banished. He only has one eye remaining. She touched a finger to her left eyelid, closing it. Quest, wherefore art thou, brother? Begun. Sarave has told you about her brother, Nekthat. If you find him, give him news of his sister. Success, plus 5-0 reputation with Nekthat, maximum reputation with Sarave, which cannot be reduced unless you betray her. Failure, variable but likely Nekthat's death. Minus 10 reputation with Sarave. Aspen sighed softly and nodded. If I meet him, I will do what I can. Sarave smiled and rocked her child while Aspen learned every part of the plow by heart. The next day, everyone gathered around as Aspen placed the collection of metal parts into a pile. It included two rusty broken axles, an old shovel, and several horseshoes they'd found as they cleared the land. The tall man glared at the crowd, shoving his hat back from his forehead so the full force of his pale glare could touch them. Don't you all have better things to do? A cheerful chorus of no resounded, and Silas and Rouge, now a nearly inseparable pair, began to giggle. Aspen growled slightly, but a small smile quirked his mouth for a moment before he set his hand to the first axle. Quest Plowboy begun. You've learned all about how a plow is built, and now it's time to put all those smarts to good use. Gina didn't give you those brains just so you could lose arguments with an arachnid. Success, experience. A plow of good or better quality. The goddess Gina will grant a boon and raise the item quality by one grade. Failure. Create a common or poor quality plow, or fail to create anything useful. Your metal is too damaged to try again. Smiling in satisfaction, he drew in a deep breath. Picturing the powerful angled wedge of the share, he fed all of his strength into the spell he could feel forming under his hands. He imagined the weight, the feel, the shape of it, exactly as it was in his wooden model, but full-sized. He knew how it needed to curve, how it needed to fit to the moldboard behind. He felt the metal soften beneath his hands, becoming a glob of molten ore, then slowly begin to take the form he required of it. Unlike in Joanna's memories, it wasn't a rapid process. He had to stop and back off several times when he pushed too much magic in too quickly, or his image wasn't clear enough. He felt sweat drip down into his eyes and closed them, finding that it actually helped him bring his desired form into focus. He didn't know when the onlookers began to disperse. He did feel when someone draped a cool damp cloth around his neck, but he didn't know who it was. His whole world centered around the plow forming beneath his palms. Twice he let the magic drift and was rewarded with blisters. Once he felt himself nearly run out of mana, but thanks to many years of practice, albeit in a far different field of magic, he was able to slow the drain to a trickle that his mana regeneration could handle. Ever so slowly, the metal began to take shape. He saw it sliding through the soil, imagined it lifting the furrow slice, easily cutting through roots and pushing aside stones. Hard earth turned to soft, fertile soil as it passed. The beast pulling it was easily able to drag it through the ground, held back only by the weight of the plow itself. He opened his eyes and watched the color, seeing the color of golden wheat shimmer along the edge. Then at last, he let it go. The plow blade dropped to the ground with a thump. Aspen followed, landing on his behind on the cold ground. The blisters on his palms had healed, but they were still tender, and the cold felt good against them, though the rough surface didn't. He fell back, splaying out his arms. Only wheels, chains, frog, and shafts left. No problem. A deep voice answered him, and a large shadow fell across his face as someone moved to stand above him. You did a good job, I think. I'm a city boy, but this looks like what I've seen in books. I'm glad I'm no mage, though. I'd far rather plow my way through things with my axe. No pun intended. Aspen opened one eye, unable to see Mott against the backdrop of the sun, but recognizing the voice. Are you sure? It sounded like you intended it to me. The big man chuckled, dropping down to sit beside his exhausted friend. Well, maybe a little. Here. He held out one of the ubiquitous, poorly crafted clay cups. Struggling to sit up, Aspen accepted the drink. Water soothed his dry throat, and he sighed in relief. He hadn't even realized how thirsty he was. He raised the cup in salute. Thanks. Mott nodded. Everyone else got tired of watching you stand there with your hands in a shiny blob. I think the kids are playing catch. He grimaced. Ah, I mean all the kids, not just the unicorns. Anyway, Sarave and Sumi are getting things ready for us to leave, and Kor is off doing whatever he does. You looked like you might pass out there a few times, so I figured someone should keep an eye on you just in case. Aspen smiled tiredly. Was it you with the damp cloth then? The other man ducked his head in acknowledgement, and Aspen gave him a crooked grin. Thank you again then. I needed it. He turned an assessing eye on the large blade now gleaming in the sun. I think I should have tried something smaller first. I just didn't want to make everything else, and then find out it was all a waste when I couldn't make this. We could have made do with the old one, I'm sure. Mott shrugged, taking back the clay cup and rising to his feet in one smooth, powerful movement. You need to practice, or you'll never get better. And you're right. It would have been a waste to spend all day working on something, only to find that the key element was impossible. But now you're stuck. You'd better get to work, because there's not much anyone else can do without that plow. Aspen rolled to his own feet, a movement less powerful but more graceful than the tank had used. Whoa. He pressed a hand to his head, grimacing slightly. A familiar pain sliced through his forehead. I must have nearly run my mana to zero. Losing a week to mana burnout would have been embarrassing. Like I said, Mott replied, turning back toward the house, I'm glad I'm not a mage. Chuckling, Aspen turned back to the remaining unused portion of metal, now a fused lump shunted aside at some point during the process. Back to work then. He sighed. The rest of the process was simple in comparison. The sun was swinging low again when he finally stood, leaning on his staff, staring at the objects in front of him. It looked more like a puzzle disassembled by a gigantic toddler than a farming implement, but all the parts were done and ready to be put together. Around him, shivering in the chill night air, stood his friends. Everyone who could had taken turns during the day, taking apart his little model and putting it back together again. Now it sat, slightly grubby from handling, and bent where Juniper had used it as a teething toy, on the table in front of Gina's statue. Aspen looked around. Everybody ready? As one, they nodded. Rouge jumped up, pumping her fist. Let's get it done. She grinned, and then grabbed a chain, hefting it with only a small grunt in spite of her slight stature. Everyone else grabbed hold of the closest piece and set to work. The process was not without problems. The wooden parts of the harness had to be carved down a little more in order to fit together. The moldboard took both Aspen and Mott to get straight. Juniper decided to run off with the smaller wheel, and she was much faster than she used to be. In fact, Aspen was fairly certain he saw the glimmer of a few stat gains, even in the fading sunlight. Finally, though, it was done. As the last chain was hooked to the harness, Aspen received a notification. Quest: Plowboy complete. You have created a plow of good or better quality. Reward: The goddess Gina is pleased. Your plow is now an epic quality item. Gina's plow, a complex plow of a quality never before seen in Quarternell. The blade will always remain sharp. The soil turned by this plow will be more fertile than before. Cannot be placed in inventory. Rarity: epic. Value: priceless. Rouge whooped when she checked the item description and slapped her hand against her father's in some form of celebration. Mott grinned and picked the elf girl up, swinging her around. Everyone else applauded or shrieked in happiness, and Aspen glimmered like a firework in the near darkness as he got several stat gains that had been delayed until he completed his item. Only Kor shook his bearded head, scraping a large hoof against the ground irritably. His tone was sour. Looks heavy. I'm not looking forward to pulling that. Not that anyone asked.